didn't think so.
The Senate Education Committee, come to order, please. This is Monday, March 31st, 2014. It's 8:01 a.m. In attendance to myself, Senator Stevens, Chair, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Gardner. We have a quorum to conduct business, and today we're going to take up Senate Bill, House Bill 162, and we have a version before us is U.A, which I would guess is U version as amended. And Senator Representative Tammy Wilson, pleased to have you with us. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please, Tammy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, Fairbanks North Pole. And in front of you is a very unique version of the 10-year. And so I'm just going to briefly tell you what kind of happened on the House floor. First of all, it started out to be where 10-year would go from current 3 years to 5 years for all districts. And then we had a lively discussion last year on the House floor on what could be the possible negative effects to some of our smaller districts. And my colleagues felt that by going from 3 to 5, it may be more difficult for them to be able to find teachers in their areas. And so an amendment was put on the floor that would have taken all of the REAAs, the rural education attendance areas, and any community with 5,500 residents or less. And so you ask, what would that have left? At the time, I didn't really realize until I went and checked. So that would leave the following districts, which would be Anchorage, Cody.
These are the only districts that this bill would have. Senator Huggins with us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to let you know just the ones that are left in the bill as amended.
Right.
And because the list is much shorter.
Okay.
Than to name those that were taken out of it. So those that would be left in would be Anchorage, Kodiak Island, Matsu, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, Juneau, Kenai, and Ketchikan, Gateway Borough, which is very unique because those are pretty much the districts that had come to me previously asking for this change. And part of it was flexibility. And the flexibility portion of that was some of them would look a long time for highly qualified teacher in science or a special educator. And the way that it would work is that if they had found one of those and had a very small pool, those who did not have tenure, they may have had to be one of the first ones to go when budgets were cut. So as I've been thinking about this bill, I have to ask myself, why are we doing it in the first place? Why does the state even determine what tenure is? Fairbanks, I asked them why they didn't testify when it was going through its hearings, and they told me they do it in their contracts. So whether or not the state does this has little to no impact because they do tenure actually even earlier than the 3 years. So if we really want to give true flexibility to, and we believe in local control, then what I would like to see is that we leave it up to the districts, let them determine whether or not they want to do it in 2 or 3 years or 5 years or 10 years in their contracts versus the state mandating it. And I just wanted to point out one more. If this were to go in the form that is from 3 to 5 years, it would not prevent a district from continuing, you know, to practice and giving tenure in 3 years if that's what they wanted to do. It just would not require it as it does now. And lastly, we have a provision that's portability. So if I go and I teach in a school for 2 years, since I'm in Kodiak, and then I go to Fairbanks for my 3rd year, I get to take those 2 years, depending upon the contracts, with me to Fairbanks to get my 3rd year. So for some, they don't necessarily evaluate the teacher for 3 years. It may only be one. And that was one of the other concerns that was brought forward. But again, at this point, districts can put that in their contracts. We don't even need to be a part of that. Universities, when they do tenure, is a very complicated system. It's very prestigious to get tenure. It's not based on just the number of years. It's based on works that they do. It's based on evaluation from their peers, their mentor to get there. And so it's just kind of interesting. We use that word, but at the university and in our K-12 system, it has very different meanings. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate you hearing the bill, and if you have any questions, I appreciate
Thanks
it.
So much, Representative Wilson. It's been fascinating, and I've gone having had tenure at the University of Alaska. It's quite different. So trying to come up to speed with how it's handled in school districts is a little different. So I didn't, full disclosure there. So, and it is a very long, tedious process that takes years and years. I guess as I look at this, If you go from 3 years to 5 years, I guess my question is, what are you going to do in that time? Are you just punting? Are you just postponing making a decision for two more years? Or is there some plan to really accomplish something within those 2 years? And I would think, you know, from my background, I would think that you'd maybe have more observation by people that can help you to become a better teacher, more people in the classroom to observe you, to help you along, a real system that would help you become a better teacher, to move from, I think we have five categories, I need to study that too, but to move from the lowest category to the best category to the best. And then how do you bring student achievement into that? So just can you tell me in going from 3 to 5 years, I assume the goal is not just to postpone a decision. The goal is to try to help teachers become better. And could you help me understand what would happen in those extra 2 years?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Again, districts would not be required to wait 5 years. If they had a teacher that was a rock star and they wanted to do it in 3 years, this bill would not prevent them from doing it. What it does do is that, again, there's two flexibility issues there. The first one is it gives a bigger pool for the bigger districts to, when things get tight and they must make cuts, that they have more opportunity to possibly keep some of the highly qualified teachers in specialized areas that they've had a lot of trouble finding. But the other portion of it, again, because of the portability, I may only have that teacher for a year. Now all of a sudden I see growth and I see great opportunity to keep that teacher, but now I have to make a decision. Will that teacher continue to grow, or have they peaked? And giving it a couple more years, in my opinion, districts are more likely to keep that teacher, have more mentoring to go with it, and eventually get to the 10-year. And the other portion of it that I do think that we need to look at again is, do we just take the regulation out and just say, districts, you do what you need to do. We have 54 school districts, all with different types of needs. Some have very hard times finding highly qualified teachers. You know, others only in specialty areas. So why are we dictating even to the districts how they need to handle something like this that is so, I mean, it's really about local control. And do we trust them to make those decisions, or do we need to kind of get down the weeds and tell them how to manage their areas? And that, you know, we've just been looking into that for the last couple of weeks as we've talked to districts, especially the larger ones that the bill includes. And they said that they absolutely could do that if we wanted them to.
As, you know, we all look at our own districts and try to figure out how this impacts them. I have a district that has a large school in Kodiak, but it has also five small village schools. And so I can see where the discussion you had on the floor, I didn't hear it, but hearing what you have to say about it, I assume that became quite a discussion about what the really small schools do, and so you've excluded them. But yet you haven't excluded small schools within a larger district.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. And I kind of disagreed with some of the argument that we would be putting a disadvantage to our REAA schools. And like you said, some of those are even larger schools than what you have in your own in Kodiak. And I've been to a few of those, and they're very small schools. And so I think that's, again, why we kind of reevaluated the whole purpose of this, because you have some districts like Anchorage and Fairbanks that we have some smaller charter schools, but most of them are pretty large. Then we have other districts who have large schools like Kodiak does, but then they have five very small schools. And then you know, Bethel, their high school is pretty big, but then they've got smaller ones. So, again, you know, where should this idea be put? Should we continue to discuss whether or not we know what's best for every district and one size fits all? Or have we gotten to a time to where it's just time to take it out and let the districts put it in their contracts and deal with it one by one? As they know how hard it is to find specialty teachers in every area and how long they keep those teachers there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Let's kind of start at the beginning, and I was struck when you said that the districts for whom the bill now applies actually came to you to ask for this change. Was it the superintendents, school boards, or an individual? I mean, was it like a formal approach, or just individuals who wanted to talk about it?
Lieutenant Garner, through the chair, the big five school districts had kind of joined together at the beginning a year ago, Anchorage, Kenai, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and Juneau. And it came from, they kind of brought us a list of five or six issues that they thought was important that would help give them more flexibility in what they were doing, and this was one of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. And if I might, Mr. Chair, so do I understand correctly that the reason for this, the biggest reason, is to have control about who to retain when there are going to be layoffs so they can keep a teacher whose skills are particularly needed, highly qualified in a science, for example, and let go somebody else who might have tenure?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, it's actually both. One we heard is that, especially special education, it's very hard to find specialty areas, even in the larger districts, to come to Alaska to fill those special needs. First in, first out normally is what happens. Mm-hmm. And that was one issue that they were concerned. But the other one really was the portability of a lot of teachers that come to our urban areas have come from the smaller areas in our state. And so they've spent a couple years waiting for openings to happen in our larger districts. And then when they do get those jobs, literally you have 1 year to do the evaluation, which is not necessarily always fair to the teacher because it's just not that they're in a new district, but it could be a completely different type of setup, different students, you know, it's a larger district. What they were able to do in their previous one, there may be a lot of changes. So, again, you might see a lot of growth, but is it enough growth to where they want to do 10-year? Because one of the biggest complaints I heard was, and this didn't just come from some of the large districts, it actually did come from some of the smaller districts, is because of all the it's not that they can't get teachers who are underperforming out. It takes a lot of time from the principals, a lot of paperwork to make it happen. And for some, they have literally chosen just to pay the contract off. And so now the money isn't going into the students. It's actually going to pay off a contract of a teacher versus trying to go through the process and work through it the way it is right now. So there were several issues that were raised.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So I'm kind of following that through. So if you had a teacher, say, at an REAA district and is there for 3 years and gets tenure and then gets an opportunity to go to a larger district and takes that opportunity, so this bill doesn't kind of address that then?
Senator Gardner, to the chair, no, it does not. It does not talk about those who have already reached tenure, and it doesn't, let's say you just received your tenure last year and it went from 3 to 5, this would not take it away.
Thank you.
Well, that's a good question. I don't think tenure transfers from district to district. Did I miss that, or does it transfer?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's based on each district can make that determination through their contracts.
It will be interesting to get a discussion
on that. And there may be help in the room behind me. Yeah. Pretty sure there is.
Mm-hmm. So, I understand that what you're saying is that your view is that you give tenure after 1 year. If you had a sterling teacher that you knew was going to be great, a district could give tenure. What if you have a teacher right now after 3 years that you think, well, this person could be a good teacher, but they're not there yet? Can that process be extended year by year? Is there a process there where you can currently take more time if someone is a teacher that you believe would be great in the future but it's not quite yet there?
Mr. Jones, my understanding, no, that the way the law reads is that at the end of 3 years that you must offer tenure, mm-hmm, to that teacher or let them go and start all over again. And again, that's kind of what this bill would do, is that it would not mandate that they had to wait 5 years, but that they could if they still – so let's say – underneath what you're saying, and on the fourth year, all of a sudden everything started clicking, and they found their ground. Because, I mean, teaching is not an easy, you know, profession. It's ever-changing. Students are ever-changing. And every college teaches, you know, how you should be a teacher differently. And so let's say at the end of the fourth year, they could offer at that time without even going to the fifth one. What this would do is would give that opportunity to those teachers who just haven't quite made it to where the districts want them to be, not forcing their hands.
Thank you, Representative. I'm not looking at the whole thing here, but I guess on the first page it says, it keeps saying shall, not that it's 5 years that the teacher shall be placed on tenure. it doesn't say, it doesn't seem to say that you could be given tenure earlier, unless I'm looking at the wrong place in the bill. Could you refer us to the bill where it would tell us that you could give tenure earlier than 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it says it in the bill. I think the way, you know, we've been, it's been explained to us that you must at that point do it. There's nothing that says that you cannot do it earlier. So therefore, it is my understanding if we tell you that you can't do it earlier, then you can. So what this does, it just says at 5 years, you must do it. And like I said, as long as we don't say that you can't do it earlier, then it is understood that you could.
Thank you. And I guess my other concern is, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead,
Senator.
Tammy, my apologies. I got here a couple minutes late. Could you just tell us why we have tenure? I mean, I've most professions, I've never heard of that term. Why do we have tenure?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, there's probably people behind me who probably give a better answer than I. I do think there are times where you could get into an unfair. First of all, it did come from the universities. The universities utilize, as they still do, in a much different form, to where you have, as we put, more hoops to jump through. You have mentoring, many years. You have to write writings. It's a long, drawn-out process, and so that's where it was taken before. But I believe where it came into existence is when there were some teachers who were good teachers and may have gone into a conflict with their administration and being unduly fired, felt that they needed some type of protection, and through that came tenure. Contracts were written a lot different, I think, than they even were then, because this was done even in the BIA days, Bureau of Indian Affairs, is when this started, and that's what the first part of the bill talks about, even though we don't have any more federal schools. I guess what I'm saying at this point, with the way we write our contracts, the way things have changed, and all the other regulations we have, haven't we really gotten to a point to where it really isn't the responsibility of the state to tell districts what they should do, but we should just open up and allow them to determine through contract what they want to do?
So, Can I try to answer that a little bit? Because, as I say, the university has tenure, as you know, but the reason was to protect the teacher from unwarranted firing because they may have done something that, say, a school board member didn't like. Maybe taught a book that the teacher that a member of the school board doesn't like, or there have been certain examples of folks who have run for school boards to get somebody because they had maybe not let their son play at in a football game or something like that. So I think it's simply a matter of protection. A teacher, a biology teacher who teaches evolution, and a school board that doesn't believe in evolution, you can't fire someone for teaching that. So it's a protection, that exists in the universities. And I think probably I'm not sure of the year, but I would guess maybe in the 20s or so, it was transferred to school districts as well.
Yeah, so I guess, I mean, every profession has people that have conflict with their supervisors, and there's some place, you go to Anchorage, right, and you work for the mayor, right, and the mayor could have the assembly. So you can always look at any form of government or governance that has some subordinates. You could always make the case that we need protection from these people. but that's okay. Because, I think that, tenure in this case is kind of a so what argument, whether you have it or not, because it's not exercised. That the number of people that are dismissed at the time of do you get tenured, if you look at, but so help me out with that statistic, that are dismissed at the time when to make the determination, do you get tenure, yes or no? My answer to myself is it is such a small percentage that it's a so what question, but tell me if I'm wrong.
Senator Huggins, for the chair, I would never tell you were wrong, but I don't think you're wrong in this case. And things really have evolved, too, as you just said. I mean, before, we had federally run schools, things were a lot different than they are today. And so, yes, you have disagreements, and as Senator Stevens pointed out that started this. I guess what I found unique as I've done the research is that we took a system from, the university, and we only took one part of it. We didn't take the mentoring portion of it and the growth part. And, I mean, it's very prestigious. I mean, it's almost like an award. at the university to receive tenure. And what's been done through the K-12 system, it's primarily been based on years. And, of course, there is evaluation, but it's not to the same extent as what you see at the university. And I think if they had taken the whole system to where it was more prestigious because you had to do all these others, we probably wouldn't be sitting here talking about it, or if contracts hadn't changed. But some of the discussion we have had on my side when we've been looking at school districts is, where do we finally get to a point to where we believe in the schools and we're going to give them as much of the flexibility to run the schools as they need to in each of their areas, or where are we going to keep micromanaging? And really, if you look at almost the laws, including this one, it's micromanaging the schools as if everything is the same in all districts. And we all know we can each bring up each one of ours, and there's a lot of differences even between ours.
Yeah, thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, Tim, you made the comment about special ed teachers were hard to find. What, you know, it's been, as I recall, in the last 10 years, we had open season for special ed teachers to reclass out of special education. Said, okay, if you don't want to be special education anymore, this is the time for you to get out of that business. So it doesn't amaze me that we would have a problem with finding numbers of special ed teachers. I mean, it was wholesale, the number of people that got out of it. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, right, but we know what happens when you do that sort of thing. I would be interested in, I'm sure there's some people in the audience that could tell us, at the time of decision of tenure, yes or no, what the break point is. And I'm reading a couple of stat sheets I have here about how many people are hired and how long they stay. Here within the last 3 weeks, you know, I ask for the information on the last year that we had defined benefits in the peer group when we had defined contributions, and the number that stayed and left just based on retirement system. If you just track new retirement system, old retirement system, is within 2 or 3%. So there isn't, at least for that particular group, there wasn't a major discrepancy between you left because retirement system that you had or didn't have versus your peers. So thank you. It's a very interesting subject that people get sometimes heated debates on, and my answer is it almost doesn't matter, because when you hit your three-year mark under our current system, you get tenure.
Well, that's you raised a very interesting question, and I don't know, is there anyone from the department here? We won't ask you now, but I don't even see any department personnel here. Well, that's unfortunate, because
a lot of help of friends, huh?
Yeah, I think there's some issues that you brought up. How many teachers are dismissed, actually? That's important to know that. does the system work, or is it just an automatic move to tenure without any real analysis?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the other one, I'm not totally familiar with. If I was a marginal teacher, okay, so, I mean, as I recall, you can kind of ride the system in the sense that in my first year, I was a new teacher. So we write it off where I'm a new teacher. The second year, I'm a new teacher, but I'm getting better. And then the third year, I'm on a plan of improvement. So you ride your way through the system and maybe get on under the radar screen. But one thing I'm relatively confident in is when it comes time to make a call on tenure, it's a so what event, because everybody gets tenure.
Senator Huggins, for the chair, was very interesting what you said. One thing that we had heard just through emails that I received was, it's a lot easier to stay on point for 3 years versus 5 years. And so would we see a difference in 5 years? Because a couple more years, that's a lot of tension, you know, for those marginal. I mean, what was really unfortunate is that we heard from a lot of the good teachers feeling that this was a shot to them, and that was never my intent to shoot at any teachers whatsoever. It's just, you know, hearing how long it takes sometimes to bring those specialty teachers to Alaska and how long it takes for them to go to all these different places in the lower 48 to find them, and then, you know, all of a sudden having that reduced on who you have to let go when the times get there. Is that really where we, the state, need to be put? And I don't think so. As far as the department having statistics on how many don't receive it on the third year, it's my understanding they don't keep those types of statistics. We probably have to hear from the different districts on whether or not, you know, they keep those types of statistics. But It's my understanding the department does not.
In the 70s, I believe, or it was the 80s, I was on a president of the school board. That must have been in the 80s. One of the concerns I had as president of the school board is that the administration was always saying, we don't have time. We have a two-year program. The 2 years tenure at that time. We don't have time to get in the classroom, and people were getting tenure without any observation from the administration. And since I left that position, now it's 3 years, and now we're talking about 5 years. So my concern, I guess, is are we just postponing, if that's just a matter of taking longer to make a decision, or are we really doing something in the meantime to help a person become a better teacher? That'd be my main concern. So I guess my question, I guess, Tammy, is, Representative, it would be have to do with the cost. I mean, we are talking about some cost to the district to get into the classroom, spend more time observing to help a teacher get better, mentoring a teacher, maybe finding a way, maybe establishing a rating process, which I really don't understand, and I didn't want to hear from the district, from the administration, how that works, that rating program, so you move from being the worst to the best, and then the whole issue of how we're going to tie, if we're going to tie a student evaluation into this whole process. I think it's there's a cost there that we haven't really thought through.
Well, Sister Stevens, I think you bring up some great points, and I think the teacher evaluation that the department has just begun within the last year with the new waiver we have will help with that. That is actually one of the biggest concerns that was brought out by the smaller districts is that, and I saw it firsthand as part of the Education Task Force, where a principal is not just in charge of the teachers. They're in charge of making sure that fuel isn't being stolen in some of these areas. That's one of the concerns, finding janitors even for the buildings. Leaks in the buildings, I mean, they're the maintenance people as well as they're the lunch people. They're trying to take care of the teachers. I mean, depending on what area you have, some principals have a huge role way outside of just evaluating the teachers. And I do believe that's why some of our colleagues were very concerned about that portion of it and what kind of negative effect it has. Again, you know, I truly believe that this is not about just delaying. If you're, for some teachers, it just takes long. Alaska's a lot different than most states. So you could come from another state, and it doesn't, unlike a pilot, that you're still flying probably the same type of plane that you were flying somewhere else. That, you know, all the controls are in the same place. You got airspace you got to call in. There's rules and regulations that are pretty consistent. In the classroom, there's anything but consistency. You know, the teaching in that school is different. The curriculum may even be different from school to school, even in the same district. And so it takes everybody a little bit longer. Just think about here the first time that you came into the legislature. You know, I'm sure most of you, I know I did. I felt very lost, very unsure of myself. Did I have the skills? I think it took several years to figure out whether I had the skills, and it came to a lot of mentoring by others and helping me along the way, making sure it was there. But I'm not too sure if I was judged in 2 or 3 years whether they wouldn't have kicked me out. Maybe in 5 years they would too. I mean, I'm not too sure I want to go there. But it is not, in my opinion, about delaying this whatsoever. It really is the opposite. I hate to see a teacher be let go because a district is unsure at 3 years, knowing that it does take a lot more work to have a teacher released if they do receive tenure and puts that energy into them. It would be unfortunate. But then, like, you know, then again, as you think about a little bit more, and that's what I would like to have more discussions with you, Senator, is, do we even go from 3 to 5? Do we even necessarily need it any longer as our system has changed and contracts are on the local level? And should it be something that we mandate one size fits all? Because we're reminded every day that Alaska is very unique and one size does not fit all.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Wilson. Senator?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This does not apply to legislators.
Tenure for legislators? Not yet.
Okay. You want to make an amendment to that?
Yeah, it probably should be about 10 years, maybe. On the other hand, Representative Wilson, I think you said this, but I think it bears restating. Probably the biggest event when it comes to potential quality in the school site is when you have the young superstar teacher, and suddenly you start looking around and you look at the rules of who you can keep and who has to go, which has nothing to do with merit. Is that accurate, what I just said?
Senator Hagestrichter, absolutely.
Yeah, and now that's a meaningful event when Representative Gardner, or Senator Gardner, is the principal of a school, and she looks around and she says, you know, that new lady Wilson, she is some kind of good, but I'm going to have to let her go because she's not, and whatever the knots are, because that is a travesty. Because, I mean, I believe in the business of merit, and I think most other people, too. And I don't know how you get to that. That's in any profession where you have some, some scale factors that, I guess, limits a supervisor's prerogative.
Yeah, Senator, that is interesting. You asked the question about why tenure, and now as I think about it, and all the things I've been reading lately, is that one reason for tenure was that districts may choose to fire a senior teacher who's at the high end of their salary scale in order to hire two teachers that are at the beginning end of their salary scale. So sometimes teachers get better the more they teach, and they do move up the salary scale, and that tenure does protect them from being fired because they are receiving a higher salary than a newer teacher would. So anyway, that's part of the issue, I think.
And that is a very valid point. On the other hand, we also have retirement incentive program, which does just the opposite. You pay people to retire to get to the same end. It's an interesting two-edged sword. I mean, I don't know, in Mat-Su, where I was on the school board, we had the retirement incentive program, which was set up for people to retire for the same ends.
Early retirement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, retirement. There was an incentive to get people to retire, but part of the logic is that the new people cost less. But we did the same thing. We just paid them.
The only problem is the new people move up the salary scale every year.
Exactly.
That didn't work too well.
As
yeah.
they should.
Yeah.
Sounds like another bill.
You're right.
But to one point to that, Mr. Chairman, is that what's interesting at the end of the day is that on one hand we're telling the districts that we're going to grade them upon their accountability, how far those students go from point A to point B. We all know that if you have a poor performing teacher, that could take years to rebound that student for it, as well as the more high performing teachers you have, the more you do want to keep them protected. So, back to kind of looking at not just this bill, because it's in statute, but the regulations, how many times are we also tying hands of the districts in one way, and at the same time then asking why they're not performing at the levels that maybe the legislature thinks they do. And I think sometimes, it kind of points back to us and not giving them some freedom that really they need to do, and only judging outcomes versus all the other points that we think are interfering from that. And I truly believe at the end of the day that with contracts now, the way they're written, with unions that we know they have, if something happens, as Senator Huggins says, or Senator Stevens, about those teachers getting to the top and just getting fired, you have union representation that I don't think you had at the level back when this bill was first put in, when we had federal teachers at that time. So, with anything else, whether this bill goes anywhere or not, I think it's been a great discussion to learn a lot more about our districts and some of the issues that they are facing, and sometimes when we're not necessarily as helpful as we think we are.
Well, thank you. It has been a great discussion. Any further questions for Representative Wilson? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. It's slightly off topic, but I'm very interested in the request suggestion lists from the district to see what else is on there. Would you share those with us?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I can get it to you. I have it in my email. I know that insurance pooling was one of them at the time. You probably have seen a lot of bills that were introduced last year by different members on our side that was directed to what we were there. But I will talk to some of my colleagues who we had the discussion, see if we can find that list again. It's been a while since we've seen it. We just kind of pieced it out to each one of us carrying different bills.
Oh, okay. Because you said that the districts to whom the bill applies now, there were a list of things they'd asked for.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, yes, there is. Like I said, it's been over a year since we had those discussions with them, but I'm sure it's hanging around, and I will talk to the others I think still have it.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind giving that to Tim, we'll distribute it.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. Representative Wilson, was there anybody you had any prepared testifiers you had on this issue that you wanted to testify? Or?
Mr. Chairman, no, we've got a lot of testimony just on its own.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate your being here. Is there anyone from the department here? Well, that's a little disappointing. This is a big issue that I think needs a lot of discussion. I'm surprised no one's here from the department. Senator.
Through the chair, just a request, if they're willing. There's two groups here in the audience that have representation. One would be NEA and one would be the Lassen Council of School Administrators. I'd be curious what their thoughts are on the issue. But once again, through the chair.
Certainly, and we have a sign-up sheet. I have on it Tammy Smith, FEA. What is FEA?
It's the local NEA.
Okay. And then Bill Ernst from Fairbanks FEA and Ron Fuhrer from NEA, Amanda Cantrell from Southwest Education Association, Andy Holman from Anchorage Education Association, and David Neese testifying for himself. Is there anybody else you'd like to add to that list?
Well, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but I do see an individual back there by the name of Bruce Johnson who represents the Council of School Administrators for the state if he has an interest.
We always like to put Bruce on the spot.
Is now the time?
Yeah, let's go ahead. And Tammy, we'll get right to you. And for the record.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And obviously, this is a significant issue. Our membership has talked about it at length. I would say that across the board, among our 53 school districts, the opinion around the importance of this varies considerably. Some are very comfortable with the 3 years. Some would like the additional years. That's primarily in the larger districts. And the rationale behind the extension had to do with, in times of reduction, often your beginning teachers, because of the lack of seniority, are the ones that are moved from site to site to site. And so they have, in 3 years, oftentimes three different supervisors. And at times, people can fall between the cracks in that regard. And so that's one argument to move it to 5 years, just to assure that nobody falls between the cracks.
Well, we're at that point, Mr. Johnson. Does tenure transfer from district to district?
No. Tenure is a district-awarded concept. It's not a state concept. I mean, it's in law, but the state doesn't grant tenure, individual districts. So if you leave the lower Kuskokwim school district and move to another district, the way the law reads is if there's a shortened period for you to acquire tenure.
The period is shorter than 3 years right now, but I see. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments?
I think the other kind of major piece here is that when it comes to dismissal of a tenured teacher, always attorneys are involved in those sorts of things, and they're pretty clear that it's going to be somewhat of a costly event. It's going to require a tremendous amount of effort, those sorts of things. So early on in this bill, there was a clause that required tenure renewal on some sort of basis, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that might be, where you didn't get lifetime tenure. And while it's true that you can dismiss a tenured teacher, it is something that districts can consider very purposefully because of the cost and time and energy that goes with it, the morale issues that go with it, and those sorts of things. So I think that's a concept that we had many members that were excited about, but it got eliminated along the way, and we appreciate the controversy around that, but we certainly would entertain that concept in the future if tenure is going to continue in our state. I think another major issue is when it comes to making a tenure decision in a district, often what happens is the principals are pulled together with who's ever responsible for that in a district, either the superintendent or human resources director, someone of that nature, and they look at each individual teacher who's up for tenure and, you know, make a very conscious decision about whether or not the performance of that individual in the first 3 years has been sufficient and that there's great hope for this individual to continue to grow and develop. So it's not something that's taken lightly. It's, you know, it's not left up to an individual principal, for instance, necessarily. They have a lot of influence in whether or not tenure will be granted, but everybody recognizes that a teacher in a district may work in many schools over their, if they stay there, their entire career. You know, they could be in three or four or five schools. And so people get passed around, and you want to pass good people around. You don't want to pass people around that nobody wants. And in rural Alaska, early on, when it was very difficult to recruit people and living conditions were really less than desirable, that frequently happened because those were the people that were available. They would get non-retained in one district, but all of a sudden you'd see them in another district. They'd get non-retained there because that's who was available in July. And people, we've improved, I think, tremendously in our outreach efforts and recruiting efforts to attract a better pool. Although I must say right now it seems to be slimmer and slimmer. I just have been involved in discussions around some of the more recent superintendent openings, and we have 13 superintendent changes in Alaska to date for next year. So big turnover, which isn't out of the ordinary. It you know, generally around 10, but the pool for those has been very small, and there's lots of reasons for that. So it's and I don't know what's going to happen this spring with teacher recruitment, but people are out on the trail already outside of Alaska. We've got in mid-April we have our job fair, and we'll just see how all of that goes and who elects to come. But in smaller districts, and particularly smaller seats and sites, and Senator Stevens and I can identify with Kodiak, we would make a decision there based on some of our more outlying communities. Is we had somebody there, they're doing okay, do we project them to be outstanding? The answer is probably no, but then the next question was, can we find somebody that's outstanding, that's willing to go there and stay for some period of time, or are we better off with the individual who's there, well accepted by the community, liked by the kids, even though we don't project them to be among the greatest teachers in Alaska? So there, it is a very complicated issue, and I think it's worthy of discussion, continued discussion, and where we land on it, I don't know that it's necessarily essential that we do anything this year, on the part of my membership anyway, that whatever we do going forward, that it's very, very thoughtful. Certainly, I don't think, and I haven't talked to my membership about whether or not we'd like this concept in collective bargaining. I think that would be a tough issue at the bargaining table, trying to determine that district by district. But again, we haven't really sat down and considered all the ramifications of that opportunity. It'd be great to have that local control, but at the same time, there's a fairness issue, and collective bargaining helps with that fairness issue on the part of both administrators and teachers. And how would that issue be hammered out at the bargaining table? And once you establish that, would you ever be able to change it? You know, is if it doesn't work, is a whole other issue. So be happy to answer any questions that you have, and appreciate the opportunity just to share the background that I have.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate your many years of service, and particularly in Kodiak. Sort of a complicated discussion, it appears, that occurred on the floor of the House dealing with sort of a bifurcation of the system so that smaller districts have different rules than larger districts. Does that cause you any concerns?
Through the chair, Representative Stevens, or Senator Stevens, excuse me. No, I don't think so. It was designed to, as I listened to that conversation last year, I think it was designed to be sure that rural districts had a good opportunity to recruit people. And they felt that if that was one of the pieces, the tools that they had in their toolbox, that you could acquire tenure in 3 years, that might attract someone that otherwise in a larger district would have to wait till 5 years. So I don't think that causes a lot of consternation. I would say one other thing in that regard. I don't know of any districts that are giving tenure before the third year or the end of the third year in the contract of the fourth year, other than those that naturally would acquire that as a result of the current law. But I don't think that's a common practice. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I've never heard about it. So it may be that there is some of that going on, but it's generally let's try this person out for 3 years and then we'll make a solid decision, even though along the way you're, you know, letting that person know that they're valued and we very much want you to remain with our district.
Thank you for the questions. Sir Dunleavy?
Just a, have you ever run across this scenario? So a teacher is, I think most of us, when we think of a teacher, we think of an individual in the classroom teaching. But in the state of Alaska, a teacher is someone who possesses a type A. So you may have, for example, a principal who has both a type A and a type B. And you may have a principal, theoretically speaking, in your school district for 15 years. Something happens, and they are removed or they leave the principalship, but do they get tenure after 3 years with their type A?
Through the chair, Senator.
And could you explain that? I'm not sure what type A and type B are. I don't. Maybe nobody else knows that either.
Okay, be happy to. Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Yes, that happens, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Type B is an administrative endorsement and certificate. Type A is a teaching endorsement. And oftentimes, because in order to qualify as a principal under the normal guidelines in Alaska, you have to have teaching experience. And so many of our principals have both type A and type B. And Senator Dunleavy is accurate. You could have a 15-year administrator in a district fall out of favor for whatever reason, or decides they no longer want to be a principal. If they possess a type A certificate, they would have tenure as a teacher. You do not acquire tenure as an administrator in a school district, principal or otherwise, but you can acquire through working as an administrator. If you possess a type A certificate, you can acquire tenure as a teacher.
Thank you.
Just a follow-up. Yeah. So you have a collective term, well, at least collective term, called educators, which includes principals, teachers, superintendents, directors, coordinators, could be even paraprofessionals. And then you narrow it down, and a teacher by definition by law is type A. An administrator is type B. And you can have individuals that possess both. And there's other certificates as well. And within that construct is also a thing called endorsements. Mm-hmm. But you could have an individual who possesses both. So they're considered both a teacher under the definition of state law with type A and a principal with an administrator with a type A. Excuse me, type B. The individual could, for whatever reason, leave the type B position, but would have been granted tenure under the type A, even though they've never taught for the past 15 years, theoretically speaking. And so they would be granted tenure not through their teaching activities or their demonstrated competence, per se, in teaching, but by virtue of the fact that they had a type A and that they then were, because of time, 3 years, granted tenure, correct?
That's correct, Senator Dunleavy, through the chair.
Thanks.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So what's required then to maintain tenure? We've heard about young teachers starting out and not staying in the profession, and maybe they get tenure and leave to have children or move out of the country or whatever and come back 10, 15 years later. Can they come back to the district and claim their tenure? Or if they leave the teaching profession to be an administrator, they can retain their teaching tenure even without using it? And what about maintaining their certification, the requirements for continuing education?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, if you leave a position, tenured position, for whatever reason, and resign from the district, you would not automatically have tenure reinstated. You would re-earn tenure. In all of those situations, other than if you're in the district as an administrator and you've earned, you know, and you possessed a type A district or certificate, then you would have tenure, and so you could move within the district and retain your teacher tenure.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, so while you're using your type B administrator's license and doing that for years, if you think you might go back to teaching or want to, do you have to have kept your teaching license, certification, whichever, current by maintaining the continuing education requirements?
Through the chair, Senator Garden, yes, absolutely. You would have to meet the 6-credit requirement in every 5 years in order to maintain either a type A or B or both. So you have to be able to demonstrate that you have kept up in that regard.
Thank you.
So there would be some in-service staff development, college courses, those sorts of things in that situation. And, of course, if you're an administrator and you're doing your job, you're in the classrooms and those sorts of things and have a pretty good sense of what's going on. And the vast majority of our principals, if not all of our principals and superintendents, would participate in that staff development and learn alongside the classroom teachers.
Thank you.
Thank you. It is complicated, as Senator Levy said. So help me understand, Bruce, if you you are a principal and you in the current system, you have a 3-year tenure. You have a teacher who you you're not ready to give him tenure. Is your choice either to fire that teacher or give him tenure, or is there another choice out there that you can make to extend that process?
Senator Stevens, I think I've personally been involved in situations where we collectively worked with the union to develop a situation where we did not have to make a determination on that individual at the end of 3 years. So we extended that through mutual agreement. And it comes about as a result of somebody that might experience a teacher who's done a decent job. They're in their third year, and they have some catastrophic life experience, death of a child or something of that nature, where, you know, they're just off their game because of what's going on in their lives. And yet their previous 2 years or whatever amount of time there was has been very, very positive. So I've been personally involved in a couple of those over the years, both in Juneau and Kodiak, as we tried to extend that opportunity for somebody to get back on their feet. But I think it's pretty rare that that happens. But for those kinds of situations, and with concurrence from the collective bargaining group, you can do those things.
Can you give us a rough idea of what takes place in observing a teacher and deciding whether someone should receive tenure? I mean, so right now you've got 3 years. It used to be 2 years, but I'm sure when you were in the district in Kodiak, it was a 2-year tenure. Do you try to get a principal in or assistant principal in to a classroom to observe a teacher every month, every year, every 2 years? And my concern is, if we keep extending it, are we just postponing that observation and that assistance to a teacher that needs some help?
Mm-hmm. Senator Stevens and members of the committee, I think that varies a lot from district to district. There's some pretty well-established guidelines that people practice in our state. I know that most recently in Anchorage, the goal there was that the principal was in every classroom or assistant principal every week. It wouldn't be a sit-down evaluation, but it would be a walkthrough, sit down for 5-10 minutes, see what's going on, just check base, those sorts of things, just so they had a feel for each of those classrooms and what was going on. So that would be on one end of the spectrum. I remember, and I don't know if they're still doing this right now, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, Representative Wilson spoke about how many things rural principals are accountable for and how easy it is to get distracted from their main mission, and that is the instructional program. And that's very, very true. And one of the things that they did out there to create some degree of fairness and quality across the district, they retained on contract some of their former principals to actually go on site on a routine basis to do those observations and feedback to teachers, as well as the principal, which they called site administrators, in those schools. So they took it very, very seriously, so that they were helping people move forward. The whole point of observations and evaluation is to help people improve and point that out sooner rather than later, and then intervene in a way that will be helpful to them, whether that's consultation with the principal or classes or staff development, whatever that might be. So I think it's very rare that we have a situation where there aren't multiple observations, at least two formal evaluations of our non-tenured teachers. If you have a more senior level person tenured, the law allows you to do less. But even there, there's plenty of interaction, and we know what's going on. I think that's one of the areas in my 30 plus years in Alaska we've made great strides.
Thank you, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. That kind of opens the door to an area that I wanted to explore, and that's the whole concept of highly effective teachers and how we get there. And we know, and we've had presentations over time about some of that, and part of it's the selection for who actually goes into teacher training programs in other parts of the world. They do that very differently than we do. Better instruction for people who are training to be teachers. We know that things like a longer student teaching time, mentoring, systematic improvement programs, the quality of the continuing education opportunities, and support for master teaching programs. So when you talk about the observations during the first 3 years and suggestions and comments and things for new teachers, did the districts that have supported this request for a five-year tenure program anticipate or ask for any help with actual improvement programs, with implementing any of these other ideas for what makes a high, what supports, say, shall we say, formation of a highly effective teacher in that additional 2 years? Because if you don't, if you haven't come along in 3 years, it seems to me it's unlikely that in two more years there's going to be a really significant difference, unless you do something differently that you haven't been doing in the previous 3 years.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I think your point is well taken. I can only speak about the districts that I have some personal knowledge of, and Mat-Su is one of those that has advocated for the increase. And they have a very robust system to support all teachers. And they have a rich collection of offerings that they provide, assistance that they provide, mentor teachers. So all of those pieces are in place. But, you know, from their perspective, even with that, occasionally somebody will slip between the cracks because they're bouncing from school to school, not because that's what they want, but that's the nature of living in our current financial environment. So your point about whether somebody can improve in year four and five and demonstrate that, my guess is, and certainly I would be at a point that if I didn't see really a quality individual emerging in the third year, I would be very reluctant to grant tenure, you know, recommend tenure as a principal. And as a superintendent, certainly I would not. I would say we could do better. But as I pointed out earlier, there are those situations in Alaska where it's very hard to attract and retain. And so a lot goes into those decisions when that happens.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And so you talked a little bit about the circumstances under which there might be a negotiated agreement that a third-year teacher who doesn't qualify, hasn't met the tenure standard, might be. Have that period extended. And the examples you gave had a pretty dramatic kind of circumstance in that individual's life that wasn't standard. But do you ever have a teacher that maybe you see improvement on, not yet up to standard, but given the difficulty that we have had in getting teachers, and it might be a little different now that there have been layoffs, but in years past, I know we used to import about 600 teachers a year from out of state, so maybe you're still better off, as you said, with somebody who's marginal. Any possibility of extending for that person a two-year, say, improvement plan, so we don't lose the 3 years experience we've got when we might not, but they don't necessarily have an excuse such as you've provided?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I think that would be very district specific in terms of their relationship with their teacher organization and whether or not something of that nature might be in everybody's best interest. I don't know about if you're asking whether it could be put in law, and I don't know how that would work, but it's, you know, again, I think these things are worthy of consideration in terms of how do we assure we've got the very best that we can possibly provide for our children.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Let's ask Tammy Smith if she would come forward. Tammy from Fairbanks. And if you'd identify yourself for the record, please, Tammy.
Thank you. Yes, Tammy Smith from Fairbanks, Alaska. Thank you for your time and service to our state and for taking time for this testimony. I've been a teacher for over 30 years, first for 5 years at Monroe Catholic and then the last 26 with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I have 2 master's degrees, one in special ed and one in regular ed, and I am currently the president of the Fairbanks Education Association. I have as great a sense of pride of being a teacher as anyone could have, and I am lucky to be in a profession that I care so deeply about. A little bit about me, I believe my pride has gotten deeper over the years as I've aged. I think in part to my mother, who retired as a registered nurse and was so passionate about it. When she died, comments about her was that she was so fortunate to work in a job that she loved and that it had become a part of her. It was her life's work. It too was a service job, so in a sense I believe I have followed in her footsteps. Now, what does that have to do with tenure or the changing of the requirements? It is this. I believe that through all of my experience and expertise and with the work I have done with literally hundreds of teachers, the way to improve a system is not through extending the requirements, which makes it harder for younger teachers to achieve a sense of commitment to the profession, but to guarantee all the steps are in place for ensuring success. It must be a system to promote high standards. In Fairbanks, I am on our Teacher Evaluation Task Force. The purpose of this committee is to select a new evaluation model and to determine the best way to implement it. Additionally, we have...
evaluation of teachers or students?
Or? Evaluations of the teachers, the teacher evaluation system.
Thank you.
Additionally, we will be determining how to meet the new regulations tying teacher performance to student growth. Earlier this year, I was asked to be a part of the Department of Education evaluation group as well for the state. This task force is also working on useful components for both the teacher and teacher and administrative evaluation tools, which will impact districts all across our state. This work being done at the state and local level is where I see the possibility for significant growth in teacher performance and administrative oversight. If we want to improve the overall performance of teachers, it cannot be by holding a hammer over their heads, but instead by putting into place reasonable steps to ensure the high quality of teaching in the classroom. How can this be done? By making sure we have rigorous teacher programs at our university, by providing administrators and supervisors excellent evaluation tools to work with, having job-embedded collaboration and professional development, ongoing mentoring programs, which gives our experienced teachers the opportunity to work with our new teachers, increased pre-service teaching opportunities, more training for school board superintendents and administrators, setting aside time for professional learning communities for teachers, and if necessary, for individuals not up to the job to educate them out of the field. I believe the current progress being made by the Department of Education with the teacher and administrative evaluation tool is the most key element we should be supporting. It advances how principals and supervisors work as instructional leaders for our teachers. Before going down a path which drives new teachers away, put your support into a rigorous evaluation tool which research supports. If we do this, I think we will see a significant difference in student performance, and that is above all what we are seeking. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. You heard the discussion earlier about senior teachers and junior teachers and all that. Looking at your own personal career as a teacher, are you any better 30 years later than you were the first year you taught?
I am so glad I get to finally say I am. You know, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and with all those experiences, I am finally probably at my peak. I continue to feel like it's one thing about educators. You have to stay on top of your game. You have. That's why I have two master's degrees. That's why I, you know, went into being the president of the association. It provided me that stimulus that I needed to be better. And in some respects, it gave me opportunities to try new things, and then I grew, and I believe, you know, I'm excited if I go back into the classroom to go back, and I feel like I will be better. I have a better understanding of what it takes to be a good teacher in front of students, and to help my colleagues across the, you know, the district, and to help my administrators as well. I also have a really thorough understanding of education philosophy, something I don't think you obtain until you are well into teaching, and I have a really good ability to now thoroughly provide guidance to newer teachers.
Sincerely, thank you very much for 30 years.
Yeah, question.
Senator.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tammy, thank you very much for coming today. You were speaking about the different elements for contributing to professional teachers and a profession. One of them you mentioned was training at an institution, university system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. Within the last 20 years, a segment of our university system lost its certification. But that's back.
Mm-hmm.
But every system can get better, right? And I celebrate the elements that you mentioned in the development of a teacher. But if you were queen for a day and you could do three things, where did you go to school?
I went to, in Minnesota, the University of St. Cloud, which is a And then I have done most of my graduate work through the university systems here in the state.
Yeah, so if you looked at our university system and teacher development, you were queen for a day, and you could do three things in those university systems to improve, upgrade, and create a starting teacher that had a greater potential to be able to allow students to be all they can be.
What would they be?
Okay.
Number one, I believe that teachers, pre-service teachers, you know, student interns, need to work with other teachers on site for as long a time as they possibly can. You know, I think now it's 18 weeks perhaps, or right around that for a semester. It's a burden because it's not a paid position, and they're still students, and they're finishing up some of those university requirements. But that time in the classroom with a mentor teacher is so important. It's like an apprentice working with a journeyman. The more time that they are in beside that teacher and hearing how the teacher is working with those students and making quick on-site decisions is very important. I think content, you know, teachers have to know their content and always be, you know, making sure that the content piece, the, you know, as an elementary teacher, as a special ed teacher, as a math teacher, that they really thoroughly understand their content. And finally, the last piece is that continuing mentorship that teachers need once they are in the classroom. I was 22 years old when I started my position, and I had a teacher who had worked for a long time, and had I not had a good relationship with her or been in a position where, you know, it wasn't somebody that really felt the need to work with me, I don't know where I would have been the first 2 or 3 years. So that mentor teacher is very, very significant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think of my wife and I as three children, and I think it would be fair to say that their approach to learning and how they learn and their attention span and, you know, how much more gifted they are in some areas than I would ever believe is significant. And so in your 30 years, the students you started teaching when you retired after those period of time were much different in a significant number of cases. Could you just relate that to us? What did you go through a metamorphosis so that you as a teacher could keep up with the students, but more important, allow them to maximize whatever brain type and whatever learning style, and but particularly when it comes to technology.
Well, two things. I'm not retired, so I just want to make sure. I thought you said something about you're retired, so I'm not retired, but still working.
But you're not teaching.
Yes. Yeah. Correct. Right. So I think the question, if I am clear, is how did I learn to work with other students who have a variety of different learning styles? And if and
but let me just clarify it. 30 years ago, you started as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and the students were much. They are, in my estimation, their learning style was much different than. When you last stepped out of a classroom,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
How you as a teacher
right.
could go through a metamorphosis to be able to address that different student.
Well, I think it's just kind of true in life, you know. You're right. We have the millennials and we have the Gen Xers, and we have to acknowledge that. And as a teacher, that's part of the learning process. You have to acknowledge where students are, where different cultures are, and you have to be ready to take some in-service on how students are learning different and how communities change, how cultures change. That's part of that learning process and staying on top of your craft. I think that's what the point here is that you have to be able to address the needs of the students that you see in front of you. And you do that by staying on top of your professional development. You mentioned the technology piece. Certainly, you know, I went from the dial phone and we had to actually click on the phone and to get my grandma to look at what we have today. And it's not easy. You know, it's not easy, but in order for me to stay on top of it, I have to be ready to always learn. And I think that's the point. Students have changed, families have changed, cultures have changed. We all know that. And we have to be more sensitive to that.
Thank you very much, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can you speak a little bit to sort of the question of teacher retention? And I've heard, I don't remember numbers or when or where, but that a surprising number of teachers leave the profession very quickly. Do you know anything about that
well,
and the reasons that they leave? Are they poorly selected going in, or are they just, I don't know?
I have read that, too, and I can't even profess to know the exact numbers. You know, it can be, you know, something I just read yesterday from Diane Ravitch said up to 50% of teachers leave the profession within 5 years. And I think part of it is that there is a sense from some of the teachers, and in my role I do see that, that they, it's a tough job. And if they don't have good mentors on site with them, that it's difficult. I think in our rural areas, man, that's got to be very, very difficult. Where I think in the larger districts, there is more support. But I can't begin to profess other than the fact that there are a lot of requirements that are challenging for teachers to meet. And so when you first get into it, it can be quite overwhelming. And so to kind of help teachers, newer teachers come on and help them kind of break it down into pieces and to make it more manageable, that is the role I believe is of the administrator and of, you know, the supportive, that you're supporting, you know, staff, is to take those big chunks of the work and to help them see how it can be managed and supported. You know, just even the grading systems are challenging for newer teachers to come on to, because right now everything is done online, and, you know, one district might do a, you know, how they process grades differently from one, and just learning some of that sometimes is tough for a new teacher on the job. And so if there's a sense of frustration or a sense of maybe not having the supports, that may be it. And you know, it is a community job, and you have to learn how to also work with the community and with your parents, and sometimes that's challenging as well.
Thank you.
So specifically to the bill in front of us, which changes tenure from 3 years to 5 years, I'm concerned about what happens in that additional 2 years. I'm concerned about what takes place to help a teacher who may be struggling to move up that scale from the worst to the best, or at least move up, what we're going to do in the meantime, and how we're going to help that teacher get better, and are we fooling ourselves by saying there's no cost to that?
Well, I actually think if and I don't know the cost number, so I have to be careful not to say that there is or there isn't. But I think I can speak to the point that, you know, what happens in the 2 years beyond the three, you know, to get to that five. I think the way to manage that is really by allowing these new evaluation systems that are coming online within these districts to go into place. Those evaluation systems, I know in Fairbanks we have adopted the Danielson model. Different districts are looking at other, like the Marzano and other particular models. And there is a cost factor to that. But I think if you want to put your money, you want to put your money into these new evaluation tools that districts are adopting at this time. I believe, too, that if you have a teacher that is struggling, I think you can identify them the first and second year and provide for some growth. And if you're not seeing the growth within the second and third year, then you have to be able to really have honest conversations with that particular person. But I would really look at these evaluation models that are going into districts that I think have a real propensity to improve the way teacher quality in performance in the classroom, and not just for teachers but for administrators as well. This is a new day, I believe, for the evaluation world.
We haven't gotten to that too much, but is that the five categories?
Well, it depends. It depends. It depends upon the tool. And so, yes, within the kind of the evaluation tools that are out there, there are those different levels, whether you're basic or standard or proficient or exemplary, I think is what you're getting. But that is specific to a model. One good thing about that is that I have the opportunity to be working with the Danielson model, which is specific to Fairbanks, and in order for an administrator to start using that model, they have to take a series of classes. It's at least a 25 to 30 hour training. I've been provided the opportunity to take that training, and it's a lot of work, but it is so clear in how an administrator needs to be viewing a teacher's work. And I think, like I said, if there is an opportunity for us to really push something, that would be it, versus looking at the 10-year model.
I appreciate having a really outstanding teacher here and your patience with us, and we're spending a lot of time, I know, and we have other people that want to speak, but I think one other issue I'd like to explore is a student achievements, a student testing of students, and how does that enter into tenure? Should that be a part of it? Do we test the students, and then what do we do about students that are in a band class or whatever?
That's a tough issue, and that is an issue we're actually looking at right now. That is a part of the evaluation tool, because there is, you know, down the road, the tying of student performance to the teacher evaluation, you know, that's coming up, I believe, next year. It's 20%, and then it grows to 30%, 40%, and then 50% within the next 5 years. And how are we going to tie that student performance to teacher evaluation, not only with the areas that are tested, but across the school, you know, across the entire band and music and PE, and how are we going to do that? I think there are still, that's still definitely a work in progress. So kind of going back to your question, should teacher tenure be tied to that performance? It's a very complex issue, because there are so many different components that go into testing, as you well know. You know, you looked at the high school qualifying exam, and what was the benefit of that, and if we had taken that and tied that to teacher performance, I think the proof would have been in the pudding. Again, we have regulation, a new regulation in place that is going to be comparable to what you're asking. So I think that that is the area that you need to explore.
Well, thank you. And as a special ed teacher, that's another issue as well. How do you tie those?
That even is another layer of complexity. As a special ed teacher, we certainly have the requirements of the IEP. That above all takes precedence over all, and if you have a good IEP in place and you have your IEP team, your intervention teams in place, so some of that work just needs to be done, right at that local level in the committee meeting right there. So I don't know how how it's going to tie together. That's a difficult question to answer.
Just one more complex. Further questions?
Senator Harkins? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tammy, you sound like you have more than a little bit of background and working on evaluations, teacher evaluations. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to spar with you, but I spent a lot of time on that completely outside of the teaching profession. But I came to believe that there are two important elements that are probably the most important part of evaluation. And the first one has nothing to do with evaluation. It has all to do with goals. All right? And if you would describe to me the evaluation systems you see, but if there's an element that is kind of like what I'm going to say. The first one is the principal listens, the teacher talks, and it's a performance objective form where the teacher sits down with the principal and says, look, there's where I've been, there's where I want to go, this is what my classroom looks like, and this is where I'm going to take that classroom. And you have some very So it's not about the principal going to the classroom to look and see how the teacher's doing. It's the teacher saying, this is what I'm going to do with these 26 kids that I have, and this is what they look like in the baseline, so that when the principal sits down at the end, that they have that sort of discussion, if you will. And that's the other piece of it. Of the two events up front, the teacher says, this is what I'm going to do with the people I have, and this is their background, and this is where I can take them to. And you have some measurable outcomes of that. The second part, though, is then the principal takes that and says, give me your form that you said and show me how you met those objectives. But most important, that conversation. It's not the principal going in the classroom and evaluating the teacher. That's kind of important. But, quite frankly, and I know that it turns out towards the end of the year, the principal says, I got to do evaluations. I got to get in the classroom. And they go do their evaluation. I don't mean to slight that.
Mm-hmm.
But the conversation between the principal and the teacher about improvement as an individual. But help me out. You're the present day expert.
Well, I think what it is, I think what you're talking about is, like your pre-conference and almost your reflection conference afterwards, and how much evaluation is really needed. I hope in a good situation that we're going to have both those situations, that we have that teacher sitting down saying, here's what I believe needs to happen in my classroom, and as the principal, as the instructional leader, what do you think? How can I get there? And what do you see will help me do the best I can do for these students? And on the other hand, like you said, I want my administrator to come in and say, oh, this is what I'm seeing, and these are areas where you may have missed something, or maybe you can improve, or this is where you're doing a really good job. And then I want them to do the walkthroughs. I want them to look. I want them to gather as much information as they possibly can on me as a teacher, so that when we have that reflection conference and we have that evaluation conference at the end, that they can honestly tell me what it is that they're seeing in my ability as a teacher that's really good, but where am I going to improve? Because that's what matters. It matters to me that I am doing a good job for my students, And sometimes you're so entrenched in that daily work that you need the person out here saying, oh, you know, this is what I'm seeing, this is how I think we can fix that. So I don't think it's a matter of which one is better. I think it's a matter of how can we provide both opportunities and many more. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does, in some respects. On the other hand, you know, in the education business, it's plateaued, which makes it natural. And the event at the end of the year when the principal sits down with the teacher and says, here's your evaluation, that's almost after the fact, mm-hmm. because you have grading periods, okay? So grading period number one, teacher gives grade to students, teacher goes to principal and says, here's the grades, here's that form I talked to you about where I was going, this is how I did in the first grading period to be able to meet those objectives.
Well, if I may, in most cases, or at least in the opportunities that I have had, there are timelines throughout the year that principals and teachers have to meet, and they require them to come in and have those conversations frequently. It's not a, this is September 1st and then this is May 30th that we've not seen each other. There should be many opportunities for those principals, and it's required on, at least on, in the area, in the schools that I have been in, there were required times when we had to meet and kind of check in and document what has been going on.
Right. Yeah. So. Thank you. I'd love to talk to you sometime outside of this. I know we're getting short. The final thing, Mr. Chairman, that I would ask Tammy is for Fairbanks, when you take the event of tenure yes, tenure no, give me the number of students over the last, or correction, number of teachers over the last couple, 3 years that got tenure no.
Well, you know, I don't know that.
No, you don't have to answer that. You could just, you know.
Tenure yes and tenure no.
Just the ones that are no.
I really don't know.
I don't understand, but it's available someplace within your stats.
It is, except for mostly that is driven by human resources, and I only learn about it when I look at the minutes of the school board, so I don't necessarily have exact documentation.
That's fine.
But can I say one thing, if you don't mind? When I get questions about tenure from new teachers all the time, and it's a big deal. It is something that they really, really are aware of, and it's a big deal when they get it for them personally. So I just want to make that clear that it's not there's a real sense of accomplishment there.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, no, I didn't mean to understand. If you interpret anything I said that it was an important event in the life of a teacher to get tenure, that's 110% of anything I said. My wife had to be a principal, by the way. So, you know, I hear some of those war stories, for lack of a better term. No, what I'm saying is just very simply when it gets to the point and the present system, 3 years, how many people in Fairbanks that's teachers that they get tenure no over the last 3 years, over by year?
Yeah.
If it's available. But, no, I firmly believe in the life of a teacher, getting tenure is a big event. They probably go out and have a party with them.
It's like turning 21, maybe. I don't know.
That's a very important question, and we will try to find out what happened if we get those statistics from the department or from the districts.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If we're actually looking for those numbers, which I would find very interesting, too, I'd also be interested in knowing how many teachers sort of quit teaching before they got to that point where they said, this isn't a good fit for me, or I can't do this, or I'm not going to be happy doing this, or whatever, who leave before.
I hope those statistics are there. If not, we may hear just a lot of thoughts. But
yeah, so, I mean, we've all seen those statistics. It's on a essentially 50% attrition rate. And by 5 years, it's 50% plus or minus a little bit. I mean, we know what that number is, without a doubt. And it's on that progressive scale. Whatever that number, if you looked at it on the scale at 3 years, would be. It's pretty simple.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Professor, I really appreciate that, your comments. I'd like to get to Bill Ernst, and we'll probably go a little bit over, but just to announce that we're not going to be able to get to all of the other folks that have signed up, but we are planning on taking a bill again on April 2nd, on Wednesday. So I hope those folks who have been kind enough to sign up will be able to come back and talk to us at that time. Mr. Ernst, thanks very much for being with us. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bill Ernst. I'm a teacher from the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I've been a teacher in Fairbanks for 25 years, currently teach and support technology in our school district for both teachers and students. My wife's also a fourth grade teacher at Hunter School in Fairbanks. I'm the chairperson of the Teachers' Rights Committee for our association, and I'm also part of the same Fairbanks North Star Borough School District Teacher Evaluation Committee that Tammy just mentioned. And I come to you today to express my concern for extending tenure for Alaska teachers an additional 2 years. Of course, things changed a bit here when we started talking about multiple tenures, different rules, but still I think the tenure, the way it sits now, is the way it should be. You were talking before, Senator Huggins, about tenure in the past. It actually started in 1886 in Massachusetts when teachers, female teachers, were fired for getting married, getting pregnant, being out past 6 o'clock, and even wearing pants. And so that was the first time where teacher tenure was granted, actually back all the way in 1886. And it's surprising that even 128 years later we still have it around. So, you know, why is it around? Because I still think that teachers need the protection to do their job. If we look at teacher tenure in the United States today, only three states have teacher tenure longer than 3 years. And about 42 states in the United States have tenure at the three-year level. And if we look at states on the West Coast, California, Washington, and Nevada have tenure at just 2 years, like we did back when I started teaching in the 80s. Increasing the length of tenure in Alaska, I think, will hinder recruitment and retention of new teachers. Teachers in Alaska don't have a defined retirement system, benefit retirement system. They don't receive Social Security in their retirement years. And this would be a third strike if we were to extend tenure an additional 2 years. If you were a new teacher or a teacher looking to teach in another state, Alaska would not be able to compete with the other states if you looked at these factors. The young teachers I work with, they're telling me that they're considering leaving the state, and some have already after 5 years, which happens to be the time when they can take their retirement in its entirety and leave. Extended tenure could be the final push to get the young new teachers to leave our state. Our state already has a high cost of living, and just last week, it was announced that Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage had the first, second, and fourth highest medical costs in the entire nation of all urban areas, and we know that our energy costs are extremely high. We're asking an awful lot for teachers to choose our state with all these factors, and we need to find a way to attract teachers, and extending tenure won't help this matter. Why is tenure right now reasonable? Giving teacher tenure in a timely manner allows them to form bonds in their community, relationships with students, school families, and other faculty. And when you delay it two more years, that makes the teachers outsiders in their school community for an additional 2 years. The promise of a secure and stable job attracts teachers to the profession and to our Alaska school districts and communities. And a three-year tenure period gives teachers some security that so they can elect to remain in a community. We want to make Alaska an attractive state in which new teachers will consider employment. Let's make sure our teacher tenure provisions are in line with the rest of the country. I urge you to vote to retain our current teacher tenure provisions. Current tenure laws in Alaska are reasonable and competitive with other U.S. states, and there's no valid reason to change what we have at this point in time. And I thank you for allowing me to testify today. And anecdotally, when I heard about changing teacher tenure to 1 to 5 all over the state, I just see that as problematic. A teacher comes into one district, they get tenure after 1 year. They go somewhere and it's 5 years, and suddenly they don't have tenure there. Then they go back. And teachers do move around our state, and I don't see why non-standardizing tenure in our state would be beneficial. And I haven't heard of that in any state where different sized communities have different tenure laws. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate your comments and appreciate the history. 1886, I didn't realize it went back that far. Any questions?
Thanks, Bill. And I appreciate the history of that. You know, as Senator Stevens mentioned, and, you know, my tenure of memory of this process, we increased it once upon a time from 2 years to 3 years, 50% increase. So what was the results of the flight of teachers or stress or whatever the symptoms are?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Huggins. I don't believe that changed anything because I think that still kept us in line nationally. And, you know, when a teacher comes out of college, they're just happy to get their first job. And they don't have a calendar checking off every day to tenure, even though it's a great event once you start that the first day of your fourth year. But I don't believe that had an effect. But I think 3 to 5 years will, because there's only 3 states in our entire United States that have tenure laws past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's Missouri, Indiana, and Ohio. They have 5-year laws, and Ohio has a 7-year law, so you have to teach the beginning of your 8th year. But the rest of the country is at 3 years, 2 years, even 1 year. So it would be way out of line. But responding to your question, I don't believe that had, even though there was consternation over that, I don't believe that had, I don't think that there was much angst over that, just because we were still pretty much in line with the rest of the country.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, Bill, this is not my bill, okay, and it's not my move to go from 3 to 5 years, but it is our responsibility to ask you germane questions.
Yes.
So, you know, at some time in the past, we voted to change the retirement system, all right, and then, you know, then there's been multiple attempts, and all of us have relooked, you know, at other systems. But essentially, you know, I have received from some constituents saying there's been a flight of teachers out of the state of Alaska because we changed the retirement system, when in fact the statistics I've seen when you compare your group to your group is plus or minus 2 or 3%. There is no difference that statistically makes any sense. But if I'm incorrect, please help me out.
Senator Huggins, through the chair. I believe that I don't know the exact numbers, but I do believe that a defined retirement benefit system is superior to a defined contribution system, because it gives teachers, again, the security to be able to count on a job for their career. The other way, with a defined contribution system, they have to be a good investor, and they don't get that investor. And there has to be good market conditions, and they have to be a good saver. So we're asking a young teacher, let's say a teacher who's 24 years old, to come out and be some sort of a market hotshot, to turn their money into something that they can live with by the time they're 65. And that's just not happening. I know I couldn't do it. I was good with money, but to turn my couple thousand dollars a year into $1 million or $2 million or whatever I need to live with, it would be very difficult. So I just think that it's a defined benefit is superior, just because there's more security security attached to it, and we know about the costs. And I think that we've proven lately that the costs are kind of cost neutral right now if we had a hybrid system. Mm-hmm. But that's my opinion, that you know, that it's just, and I know you guys are struggling with that too, but just my opinion that the defined benefit, and I am a member, I'm a tier one, hired in 1989, so I am lucky to be a tier one with a defined benefit system. But my wife is a tier two, so she's under totally different rules when it comes to, but she still has those protections. But then our latest employees, of course, they have a defined contribution system. They have to be savvy investors if they're going to be prepared later in life. Otherwise, they're going to be on our public holes while we take care of them.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree with anything you said, and I think all of us would like to have the most generous system we could have that's affordable, but that's a whole different subject.
It is.
The question that we're talking about, that your point was that people's conduct based on 3 to 5 years changes. And in this case, my question for you, from going from defined benefit to defined contribution. I'm just looking at the different things that we've done. Statistically, I don't see whether what people do based on that kind of system. And I would say almost the same thing about tenure, because if I'm wrong, correct me at some point in time. But I think that tenure is a non-event. It's a celebration that I got tenure, but almost everybody gets tenure. So it's a non-event. But if I'm wrong in that, please help me out. I'm not interested in debating with you. I think it's a non-event.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I heard you state that before, and I would have to agree with that. I believe when a teacher starts, like I said before, they're not checking the days off to tenure. And I've worked in other industries before. I've worked in the airline industry, and you gain seniority, and your seniority allows you to possibly keep your job. And tenure is a kind of a form of seniority. But I would say that tenure is a day to celebrate, but that I believe that it's administrators' jobs to look at brand new teachers and make sure that they really are right for the game. And having that, it's 180 days times three, 540 days plus the other days, they work 570 days to look at these brand new teachers and to say, yes, I think you're going to be a good teacher, or you need help. And I believe extending 2 years is just extending it unnecessarily. And I don't believe there's any benefit to extending it. And the fact that it's a non-event, I think it does happen, and I think people celebrate on kind of a low-key level when they achieve tenure. Now, at the university level, it's a really big deal, because there's many more steps and hoops to go through to gain tenure, and we see in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner that several times a year, the paper with all the professors who've gained tenure or their promotions, and you can see all the work that they've done to achieve that. And it's a different matter in the university system as opposed to public school system.
Thank you very much, Rod. I really appreciate your time with us. Sorry we've gone over, but I'm glad you could be here. Just again, for everyone, we'll continue this discussion on Wednesday, April 2nd, and we're adjourned.